good afternoon to you. How are you doing? It's 5 o'clock, so it is. It is Wednesday, November. Good God. It's March 3rd, that's what it is, 2021. It's me, the BBG. Hope you've had a lovely Wednesday. You found me again. By God, you found me again. Let's do today's programme, Flying Solo Today. I would love your participation. Do tweet me. It's at BBG Richie. You know this by now.
It's the BBG, not the BBC. You're listening to the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford in Greater Manchester.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, we've been packed with guests all week long. It's time for you and me to have a chat. I've got a really interesting roundup of today's big news stories for you coming up over the course of however long it takes, because I don't have a Scooby-Doo. Well, I could be here for 45 minutes, an hour and 20, who knows? Only God knows. That's who knows. Right, get rid of the theme tune there. Love my theme tune. Never gotten tired of it. Are you tired of it, Jar? You can tell me. Before we go on, breaking news out of the United States, covered this afternoon by the Mail Online. Now, I don't know how serious this is, but I reckon it might be serious. The Mail Online is reporting this afternoon, and I've taken this, done a little bit of research myself as quick as I could, and I've put an article on richieallen.co.uk, but I must credit the Mail and also CNN in America, because some doctors in the United States are saying that some women in America are developing swollen lumps in their breasts after receiving a coronavirus jab. And those women are being told not to worry their pretty little heads about it, not to book a mammogram, leave it for at least 4 weeks after being vaccinated, even if you're worried. They're saying that the lumps are in the body's lymph nodes, and these lumps are occurring on the same side of the chest as the arm, where the jab was delivered. Okay, so whichever arm the jab was delivered into, the vaccine was given to, the breast on that side of the arm in some women is developing lumps. And women are being told it's just a naturally occurring side effect as a result of having this vaccine. But I would imagine a lot of women will be very concerned about this and won't take at face value the US FDA Food and Drug Administration's claim today that, well, this is just a side effect. Don't worry, as I said, your heads about it. I think if I was a woman and I had a lump in one of my breasts, I'd be worried. It's as simple as that. This is what the FDA has said in the US. For the Moderna jab, 1 in 9 women have lymph node swelling or tenderness after the first dose, rising to 1 in 6 after the second dose. For the Pfizer jab, it is less common but lasts longer, with the swelling persisting for around 10 days, whereas the lumps in Moderna patients disappear after 2 days. So it seems that they're circling the wagons in the United States. By they, I mean the regulatory body, the FDA, and of course the media, and of course, right, the usual suspects, the pharmaceutical companies. That's just a side effect, ladies. There's nothing to worry about. Now, I'm not saying that it is something to worry about, because I'm not a doctor, I'm not an epidemiologist, I'm not a physician of any kind. Of course I'm not. I have no experience. But these people have a habit of telling lies, don't they? And I will say it again, you'd have to be stone cold blinking mad with the evidence emerging already about these experimental gene therapies. You'd have to be mad to take it. So check that story out, richieallen.co.uk. I'm sure we'll hear more about this in the next day or so, maybe from the Mail Online. But you can absolutely guarantee it that the UK media will not report on this. Well, of course, the Daily Mail did. But don't expect the broadcast media in this country tonight, tomorrow or tomorrow afternoon to ask a government representative to comment on news coming out of America that some women are developing breast lumps having had the first dose of the jab, with that number of women increasing after the second dose has been administered. Don't hold your breath waiting for a British journalist to do his or her job and to demand that a government minister or Whitty or Vallance or Susan Hopkins acknowledges that this is happening and answers for it. Don't hold your breath. All right, we'll move on from that for the time being. 5 minutes past five. That bloody Nicola Sturgeon inquiry. All day today, boring the bejesus out of me, so it is. Harassment allegations, of course, were made against Alex Salmond. In the past, the former Scottish First Minister, he was unequivocally cleared of those judicial process, not guilty. Sturgeon is being accused of mishandling those allegations because she saw the opportunity to plot against him and advance herself. So Jimmy Clanke, has been in Edinburgh all day answering questions. Salmond did it on Monday, did he not? It was Monday, wasn't it? It was. Who goes into politics? What type of person, what type of human being wants to be a politician? I've met so many of them face to face and interviewed so many of them, and only a tiny, 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 tiny minority appeared to me as decent people who are genuinely interested in the advancement of others. 99.9% of them, dear listener, at least as far as I could tell anyway, were only interested in the advancement of themselves. Horrible people, most of them. Horrible people. Dolly Parton, what have you done? What have you done, Dolly? I'll never play one of your LPs again. This is what Dolly did. She's had the jab. Here she is, God bless her.
Well, hey, it's me. I'm finally going to get my vaccine. I'm so excited. I've been waiting a while. I'm old enough to get it, and I'm smart enough to get it. So I'm very happy that I'm going to get my Moderna shot today. And I wanted to tell everybody, I think you should get out there and do it too. I even changed one of my songs to fit the occasion. It goes, vaccine, 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 vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine, 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 vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is. And that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it? If we could get back to that.
Boom, boom.
But anyhow, I just wanted to encourage everybody, because the sooner we get to feeling better, the sooner we are going to get back to being normal. So I just want to say to all of you cowards out there, don't be such a chicken squat. Get out there and get shot.
Don't be a chicken squat. Get out there and get your shot, goddammit. Dolly Parton just called us chicken squats, dear listener. What are we going to do about it? Are you going to take that from Dolly Parton, eh? Good old Dolly. God love her. God forgive her, for she knows not what she did or does. People are saying she hasn't really had the jab. Really? How do you know? I'm sure she probably has had it. You think Dolly is the Illuminati, that Dolly is in on it? You know? I'm sure she has had it. I don't know. I can't say for a fact she has, but I don't see them having conspiratorial conversations with celebrities saying, hey, listen, this is really a toxic tidal wave of crap, right? But we really want people to take it so that it will kill off many of them and make even more of them infertile. So, Dolly, do us a favour. Pretend that you had the jab, will you? Will you? I don't see that as plausible, personally. You will call me naive, no doubt. But then, of course, you know everything. You should throw all your encyclopedias in the bin, because you know it all now. Dolly might have had it, Dolly might not have had it. I don't care. Anyway, what I do have for you is I've got some classic Dolly Parton jokes. Do you want a few of them for the crack? It is a Wednesday. It is a Wednesday. You could say that I have a veritable bonanza of Dolly Parton gags. What am I doing? I'm playing the theme tune. This is Car Crash Radio. I would be fired if it wasn't for the fact that I'm self-employed. Let's try that again. That segue was dreadful, wasn't it? You could say I have a veritable bonanza of Dolly gags. Yes. Did you hear about Dolly Parton? I'm just giving up. I'm throwing all my toys out of the pram. I couldn't organise a piss up in a brewery. I just ruined that segment. I worked on it for at least 2 hours. I tried again. We'll pretend it didn't happen. I can edit it out later and it can be removed from the podcast. I won't do that for the crack. I'll leave it in. But anyway, here we go. I've got a veritable bonanza of Dolly gags. Yes. Did you hear about Dolly passing out on stage? It took 4 guys to carry her off. 2 abreast. I'm here all week. What do you call the sweat on Dolly's chest, eh? Mountain Dew. How can you spot Dolly's children in a crowd? They're the ones with stretch marks around their mouths. Yes. That's my personal favourite. No, this is my personal favourite at all. Dolly and the Queen die on the same day. They're at the gates of heaven. The two of them. Queen Elizabeth II, the lizard, and Dolly. And there's only one space left in heaven that particular day. And Peter at the pearly gate says, only one of you can get in. Peter says, Dolly, if there's some particular reason why you should go to heaven and not the Queen, speak your peace now. Say your peace. So Dolly whips out her titties and says, look at these, they're the most perfect breasts God ever created. And I'm sure it will please God to be able to see them every day for eternity. Thanks, Dolly, says St. Peter. Your Majesty, same question to you. Why should you get in? The Queen takes a bottle of Perrier out of her purse, drinks it down, pisses into a nearby toilet and pulls the lever to wash it away. Peter says, okay, Your Majesty, you may go in. Dolly is properly pissed off and says, what was that all about, Peter? Would you explain that to me? I show you two of God's own perfect creations and you turn me down. She pisses in a kazi and she gets in. Would you explain it to me? Sorry, Dolly, says St. Peter. It's fairly simple. But even in heaven, a royal flush beats a pear no matter how big they are. Love, Dolly. I forgive you, kid. Ah, Dolly and Jolene, Dolly and Jolene. A number of you are telling me Dolly invested in the vaccine, Richie. Did you even read my story on richieallen.co.uk? Did you? I know this, and I did write about it. I did give it a mention today. She has donated $1 million to vaccine research, and that apparently went towards the Moderna vaccine. Dolly, all right. Forgive them, they know not what they do. Look, it kills us when the singers and songwriters we love do these things. Bruce the Boss Springsteen. I mean, I must have bored the granny out of you over the years telling you how much I love Bruce Springsteen. Now he's making podcasts with Barack Obama. I mean, give me a break. And I can't give Bruce a pass on this. I can't. When Barry Obama was on the campaign trail, I don't know, what was it now, 12 years ago, whatever it was, I can understand celebrities like Bruce Springsteen being taken in. I can understand it. Thinking, oh, this is fantastic now. A great wrong is going to be righted. A black man in the White House. It'll be fab. It'll be wonderful. I can understand that at the time. What I can't understand is this obtuse attitude now. Surely Bruce Springsteen is well aware of the fact that Barack Obama was nothing more than a warmongering, murdering scumbag son of a bastard, just like his predecessor and his predecessor's predecessor. He must know this now, Bruce. If you sat Bruce Springsteen down in a pub, in a snug or something, and said, boss, what did he do during the time he was in office? All he really did was drop more bombs than George W. Bush. Do you know that? And wrecked and sacked Libya. Committed murder wherever he went. Surely you know that now. But no, the boss is making podcasts with Barack Obama. I despair. My heroes and heroines are, well, they're letting me down big time. Big time is what's happening. BBG Richie, that's the Twitter. But old Dolly, I love Dolly. Dolly once said, I wanted to be the first woman to burn my bra, but it would have taken the fire department about 5 days to put it out. See, I love that. Bit of self-deprecating humour. Home is where I hang my hair, said Dolly one time. It's a good thing I was born a girl, said Dolly, otherwise I'd have been a drag queen. I love it. And my favourite Dolly-ism. Dolly once said, when I talk to a man, I can always tell what he's thinking by where he's looking. If he's looking at my eyes, he's looking for intelligence. If he's looking at my mouth, he's looking for wisdom. If he's looking anywhere else except my chest, he's looking for another man. Dolly Parton. Now, the budget. Rishi Sunak, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, delivered his budget today. The second time he's done that. Both of them were delivered during lockdown. Okay? Here's Sky News' Adam Bolton with the summary of what Rishi Sunak had to say today. Now, I know this will be of interest to some of you. For those of you who have no interest in this whatsoever, calm down. It'll only take a couple of minutes. Sky News' Adam Bolton with the, I suppose, the salient points, the more interesting points of today's budget speech by Rishi Sunak.
Good afternoon. The Chancellor has unveiled his budget with more money going towards protecting jobs and helping businesses through the pandemic. That includes an extension of the furlough scheme. But there was a sting in the tail in the shape of tax rises. Rishi Sunak announced a freeze on the income tax threshold from next year and also a rise in corporation tax from 19% to 25%, set to come into force from 2023. Let's take a closer look at the key measures. The Chancellor will extend the furlough scheme, which has protected around 11 million workers so far, until the end of September. The universal credit uplift of £20 per week will continue for a further 6 months, something Rishi Sunak initially resisted. Minimum wage will increase to £8.91 an hour from April. The stamp duty holiday is extended until the 30th of June. Business rates holiday for the retail, hospitality and leisure sectors will continue until the end of June as well. And personal tax thresholds will be frozen from next year until 2026. That means take-home pay will not fall. All alcohol duties will be frozen for the second year in a row. And the planned increase in fuel duty has also been cancelled, the Chancellor said. Corporation tax will rise from 19% to 25% from 2023 onward.
Right, keep that in mind now, the rise in corporation tax from 2023. We'll come back to it briefly in a moment. Here is the Chancellor himself, Rishi Sunak, the Goldman Sachs boy. Here he is.
Our response to coronavirus has been fair, with the poorest households benefiting the most from our interventions. And our approach to fixing the public finances will be fair too, asking more of those people and businesses who can afford to contribute and protecting those who cannot. So this government is not going to raise the rates of income tax, national insurance or VAT. Instead, our first step is to freeze personal tax thresholds. We've nearly doubled the income tax personal allowance over the last decade, making it the most generous of any G20 country. We will, of course, deliver our promise to increase it again next year to £12,570, but we will then keep it at this more generous level until April 2026. The higher rate threshold will similarly be increased next year to £50,270. And will then also remain at that level for the same period. Nobody's take-home pay will be less than it is now as a result of this policy. But I want to be clear with all members that this policy does remove the incremental benefit created had thresholds continued to increase with inflation. We are not hiding it. I am here explaining it to the House, and it is in the budget document in black and white.
Yeah, the way to describe, I suppose one way to describe it is we're going to suspend the pain for a couple of years, but in a couple of years, in 2 to 3 years' time, the pain's going to be unbearable. I mean, he said corporation tax on company profits will go from 19 to 25% in 2023. But he said that he took pains to say, but quite a few smaller companies will see their rate remain at 19%. So don't worry about that if you're a small company. But the vast majority of companies are making profits of, not the vast majority, I better be careful what I say here. I had a spreadsheet, I've not got it to hand. A lot of companies in this country are making profits of more than £50,000 annually. He said today, Sunak said, I'm going to raise corporation tax by 6% to 25% in 2023. But don't worry, he says, if your annual profit is less than 50 grand, you'll stay at the rate of 19%. But a great number of companies and businesses in this country are making more than £50,000 a year in profits. If they weren't, they wouldn't be able to pay staff. They wouldn't be able to expand, I should say, and take more people on and so on, so on, so on. I don't mean, obviously, the staff costs, of course. They come out at tax payment time. Those are deducted, of course, from your taxation figure. But the point is, it's going to be very, very difficult for businesses to do business from 2023 onwards, paying 25% corporation tax. And there's been very little discussion of that this afternoon. One thing that is interesting is that Sky News has run a graphic across the bottom of its screen all day today, which is a number, and it is the figure, the financial figure of current UK debt, the UK being £2.15 trillion in debt right now and growing. And Sunak has been saying today, we'll suspend the threshold on personal personal taxation, put corporation tax up in 2023 by 6% and all of that. We're dealing with it. Don't worry about it. Everything's going to be hunky-dory. It isn't. I was going to do a bit on fractional reserve banking, but I'm not. I'm going to leave that, and I might do it tomorrow, or I might leave it until next week. Right, moving on. I had a Jean Murray on yesterday, Irish blogger. Enjoyed having her on the programme. Jean was in St. Stephen's Green on Saturday last in Dublin with several thousand anti-lockdown protesters there. And a firework appeared to be aimed at an Irish police officer, a Garda Síochána. There's video of it anyway. And the fallout from this continues in Ireland today. The national and local Irish broadcast media has decided that anti-lockdown protesters are little more than thugs and Nazis. You're not surprised, you're not shocked, neither am I. The Irish media takes the blue ribbon for the worst. Well, it's a bit the worst in the world. I can't see anything anywhere else around the world that's any worse than it. Wretched, because at one time it was a standard bearer, and for me at one time it was even better than the BBC in terms of the standard it held itself to. Now, Prime Time is a current affairs programme on RTE1 television. It's a big show, a flagship show for the station. Last night, the protests on Saturday's protests were debated. The editor of Gripped.ie, John McGurk, was on with Neil Richmond, a Fine Gael TD. The presenter is a woman called Louise Byrne. She's putting the question here to the journalist John McGurk. Listen.
John, there was violence at this anti-lockdown protest on Saturday. There was violence at an anti-lockdown protest in August at the Custom House. There was violence at an anti-lockdown protest at Leinster House in September. Doesn't that suggest that the problem is the anti-lockdown protest rather than an extreme fringe?
There was violence at the Black Lives Matter protests in Blanchardstown in January. Does that suggest that the problem is the Black Lives Matter protests rather than the...
There were
rocks thrown at Gardaí in Blanchardstown and Mulholland. It was widely reported. But before we get into the discussion, I think it's very, very important to say, like, I condemn, and every reasonable person in this country will condemn utterly, violence against the Gardaí or against anybody else. But there is no other protest movement in the Western world that has VTs run on the national broadcaster suggesting that they're a far-right, neo-Nazi, crypto-fascist movement. I mean, one thing that was missing from that VT, and I watched all 5 minutes of it, and what was missing, the viewers at home will have noticed, is any single interview with any single person who actually took part in the protest. Now, you didn't interview anybody. I did. I spoke today on the phone to a guy called Billy. I won't give his second name, but he's from the Northeast. He's 47 years old. He voted for Neil's party in the last election because he thought Leo Varadkar was for the person who gets up in the morning. His business has been shuttered for 159 days, and this month he won't make his mortgage payment. He hasn't told his wife that yet. He's at his wit's end. He said, I used to think I was the person who gets up in the morning, but now I don't get up till 11 o'clock.
There are, John McGurk, 500,000 people in Ireland who've lost their job and have reason to be aggrieved.
Exactly.
And 498,000 of them were not at a protest on Saturday where bottles of urine were thrown at Gardaí.
Let's go through the numbers, actually, be fair, in case people at home aren't familiar with them.
Mm. Just before John McGurk reads out the shocking unemployment numbers in Ireland, listen to the last comment by Louise Byrne, the presenter, again.
There are, John McGurk, 500,000 people in Ireland who lost their job and have reason to be aggrieved.
Exactly.
And 498,000 of them were not at a protest on Saturday where bottles of urine were thrown.
Yeah. That's the state broadcaster for you right there. 500,000 people lost their jobs and 498,000 are taking it up the backside like good little citizens. Why can't the other 2,000 just accept that they live in an open-air gulag now in Ireland and swallow their medicine? That's the state broadcaster for you there. Sit on your backside and allow yourself to be destroyed. Allow yourself to be put in a position where you might lose everything you have. Your home, your car, your family, your relationship. Everything. How dare you go to St. Stephen's Green on Saturday last and protest it? Anyway, here's Gripped.ie, or John McGurk, the editor of Gripped.ie, with the numbers. These numbers are astonishing, really. I guess if you're not in Ireland, or if you're much further away, maybe in the US, you might be absolutely flabbergasted when you hear the state of the situation in Ireland right now.
50% of people between 18 and 25 in this country are unemployed. It's actually 53%. One quarter of the adult population are unemployed. None of the three of us in this studio are unemployed. None of the three of us in this studio have taken a salary cut. The people who are suffering in this pandemic, the people who take to the streets to protest, are the ones who are being called Nazis and far right for doing it. While Neil comes on tonight, and he hasn't spoken yet, so we'll give him a chance, but he comes on tonight to advocate for banning protests, while last August, His Taoiseach went to the European Union to advocate for the right for people to protest in Belarus. On the 1st of June last year, there was a Black Lives Matter protest in Dublin, attended by a government TD, and your party leader, Neil, the next day, in the middle of a level 5 lockdown at the time, sent a tweet of solidarity, saying, "I stand with these protesters."
Yeah. More than 50% of 18 to 25-year-olds unemployed in Ireland. One quarter of all adults in the country are unemployed. It's astonishing, that. And a very good point made there by John McGurk, Leo Varadkar, tweeting solidarity for BLM protests last year during lockdown. And Neil Richmond, Fine Gael TD, on the same panel last night on Primetime. He's in government, his party is in government with Fianna Fáil. Listen to his response to this.
OK, Neil Richmond, people have a right to protest.
Absolutely, people do have the right to protest, and I think what we saw on Saturday was a large amount of people who are understandably extremely frustrated. They're tired, they're broke, and they're absolutely hurting at the moment. No one denies that, but they're being used. They are being used by an extremely sinister far-right element who are preying on their vulnerabilities to propagate their conspiracy theories, to attack people in authority, and try and lead them down this primrose path that there's an easy solution to the very complex problem of a global pandemic.
Well, they might say, though, that we had a chance to eliminate COVID during the summer and to introduce hotel quarantine, that they have a legitimate right to demonstrate against your government's policy. Are you trying to silence them?
Absolutely not. But I think we have to remember that these restrictions won't go away by 2,000 people coming out in the street to a super spreader event. They won't go away when we're actually starting to turn the tide once again, and the hope of the vaccine provides the light at the end of the day. And to think that we're trying to silence free speech, we're at the level 5 lockdown. People are breaching rules in relation to distance of 5 kilometres from their home, of organising these mass events. And again, it comes back to who's at the heart of it. They're preying on vulnerabilities. They're trying to say there's an easy solution, that there are easy answers, and they're bringing people out in the street. But at the end of the day, the vast, vast majority affected didn't come out. Because yes, they may be frustrated with the lockdown, they may be suffering, but they know a mass gathering of people is not the sensible or responsible thing to do at this time. And I'd appeal to those decent people who are suffering, and I work with them every day, John. That is my job. And I appeal to them to do the right thing.
Do the right thing and just accept your suffering. Accept your job is gone. Accept that every penny of your savings is gone. Accept that your relationship is broken up because you couldn't handle the strain of trying to find, you know, where you're going to get your next meal from, how you're going to pay the next bill that comes up, the next water bill, the next gas bill. Just accept it. Do what you're told, and don't go out and protest, whatever you do. This is Ireland. I've not set foot in my country since late 2003, and I never will again, under any circumstances. I'm astonished at a people who kept at bay. We kept invaders at bay, that tiny island of mine. Nobody could conquer the Irish, nobody. The Celts, the Normans, I should say, the Vikings, the British Empire, couldn't conquer my people. And now you have clowns, cretins like this guy, this Fine Gael TD, this guy, Richmond, Neil. What sort of a fucking surname is Richmond anyway? He's not Irish, is he? He couldn't be with a surname like that, huh? Telling people, condemn yourselves to a life of deprivation and homelessness because we tell you you have to. You're breaching regulations, he said. You're going beyond the 5 kilometer distance that you're allowed, the circumference that you're allowed that you're allowed travel when you leave your house. Astonishing stuff, this, isn't it? In a country with 25% of adults out of work and nothing to look forward to. There is nothing on the horizon. The jobs being lost forever to this scamdemic will never come back themselves. Those industries are gone. There are no new industries coming for these people to migrate to reskill. Nothing for them. And they're criticising people for going out to St. Stephen's Green on Saturday. God love them. To exercise their human right to say, what the fuck is going on? A point made by John McGurk in this next clip. He says, the journalist, that people are protesting because they've got nothing to lose. They're on their arses.
The only people in this country who are organising protests, Neil, are the people with nothing left to lose. Conspiracy theorists are conspiracy theorists. They'll always exist. I'm saying the only people who are organising protests in this country are people with nothing left to lose. You want people to speak out reasonably against the pandemic? Dr. Martin Feely spoke out reasonably against the lockdown. Your government and HSE told him his position was untenable. Una McGurk, a respected barrister, spoke out against the lockdown. Your government sacked her the other day. We have a record in this country of people who want to dissent, people who want to speak out and say, actually, I think the fact that we have had the longest lockdown in Europe, longer than Greece, Poland, Germany, Estonia, Romania and Bulgaria combined, and with more deaths than most of those countries. The fact, all those facts, people want to protest those things. When reasonable people speak out, your government sacks them. When ordinary people come out and protest, your government calls them Nazis.
John McGurk, I don't want to interrupt you.
Astonishing. I don't want to interrupt you, she says, but she did anyway. That's astonishingly good by John McGurk, who I never heard of until recently. The editor of Gripped, that's G-R-I-P-T, Golf Romeo Indigo Papa Tango, that's right, gripped.ie. He's the editor of this online public. He went to Trinity, the guy. He's not perfect now, right? He's not perfect. He might be pro-vaccine, but look, he might not know any better. That's astonishingly good. He has absolutely destroyed Louise Byrne and the primetime programme by pointing out their ineptitude and their complete and utter failure to do their jobs. Brilliant. He's annihilated the Fine Gael TD, saying that doctors and health officials have been fucking fired when they have asked the questions that the great unwashed were asking in St. Stephen's Green last Saturday. He has eviscerated the two of them, the presenter and the idiot from Fine Gael. Rather than deal with what he said, and he said it very lucidly, and he put it very well, she goes back to conspiracy theories. This is how the media operates. Just muddy the waters. The media doesn't care. The presenters don't have any fear of embarrassment. They're not worried about winning or losing. It doesn't matter. It's about muddying the waters. Okay, so she goes to conspiracy theories. Where else does she have to go but there? Here she is.
I don't want to interrupt you, but I mean, if we look at the evidence from the protest, the issue seems to be the company that the anti-lockdown protest is keeping.
Imagine that. You're actually fucking listening to somebody who would describe themselves as a journalist arguing with a real journalist about the company that is being kept by the protesters. Can you fucking Adam and Eve it in 2021? I'm not going to speak to the points that you raised in the previous 3 minutes about my absolutely pathetic fucking organisation, RTE, and how it pulls the wool over people's eyes and is nothing but the propaganda unit of the Irish government and the Brussels EU. No, I'm not going to deal with that. I'm going to bring it right down to the types of company that the protesters are keeping. Can you Adam and Eve it? It's astonishing. I think it's bad here. I think Sky, Channel 4, BBC Sky, and of course The Times is a podcast now. It's fucking garbage on Spotify. I think it's bad here. Holy shit. Listening to that last night, let's bring it down to, well, those protesters now, yeah, they keep some pretty bad company, don't they? Don't they, John?
Flyers handed out on Saturday promoting conspiracy theories that 5G was causing COVID. It's part of a plan to depopulate the world. Do you believe that?
No, they're all nonsense. But you know what's interesting? Last year, there was a protest at Dáil Éireann, which Trócaire attended, against racism. That protest, and it was an anti-fascist protest, that protest was also attended by Éirigí, the people who shot a journalist in Northern Ireland 2 years ago. Primetime did not run a segment asking Trócaire or any of the other NGOs, Amnesty, etc., why are you standing beside people who endorse terrorism in Northern Ireland? You're only ever interested in calling people far right and calling people Nazis, and
do you not think there is a problem?
When did you drag a government TD in here?
Do you not think there is a problem, John McGurk, with conspiracy theories being disseminated as part of a lockdown?
Do you know, ask me about any conspiracy theory, and I will tell you, and I will tell the people at that protest, most of whom, by the way, also agree that those conspiracy theories are nonsense.
Where were the stewards telling them to go away?
Nonsense.
Where were the stewards trying to calm things
down?
Why
are you trying to hold me responsible for the organisation?
I wasn't there, so I can't support the march.
I said I support people protesting. I think people should be protesting more at the record of this government. I do not support or endorse conspiracy theories, and don't try and put those words into my mouth. But what I will say is this: it is remarkable that last year, at the height of a level 5 pandemic, your constituency colleague, a government TD, attended outside the American embassy a Black Lives Matter protest that was completely in breach of the regulations. This television programme didn't even bring that TD in here and ask him why. But ordinary people protest the lockdown, and all of a sudden, Nazi panic.
Yeah, he's brilliant. That's an absolute example there, right there. If you're going into a hostile situation as a guest, as an interviewee, if you're going into a studio and you know that they're going to try and do you up like a kipper. Absolutely brilliant. He repeated again, you know, you've got government officials last year attending protests. You've got Leo Varadkar applauding people attending protests in lockdowns. You don't bring those people into the programme or onto the programme to ask them to account for their fucking behaviour. But an ordinary member of the public goes out to St. Stephen's Green on Saturday to assert his or her right to life, to liberty, the pursuit of employment and the pursuit of happiness, and Nazi panic, as he said. You called them Nazis. It's dreadful stuff, that, isn't it? I doubt you'll be hearing John McGurk anytime soon on national media in the Republic of Ireland. The time is exactly 20 minutes to the top of the hour. Here's Sonny and Cher. Why not? I mean, why not, eh? Sonny and Cher, I Got You, Babe, on the Richie Allen Radio Show. Let me just get rid of the music there. Hi to Noel Cox. How you doing, Noel? Thanks, Richie. That gripped lad is a living legend for standing up to them bastards, says Noel. Thanks, Noel. Andy Newman says, I hope that presenter was no relation to Gay Byrne. That's a good question, Andy. I don't know that. I don't see very much Irish television here. It isn't available in the UK, unless you're going to get a VPN and watch it online, but I don't do that. I generally tend to grab it when it's sent to me. In fact, I was alerted to that clip by Fionnuala Murphy this morning. How you doing, Fionnuala? If you're listening, I should have given you a shout earlier on. Thanks for alerting me to that clip. I do see it. I do pay attention to RTE, the Today programme, Claire Byrne, and another listener has been sending me clips from that. I read the Irish papers, of course, and I grab the Irish news 2 or 3 times a week, but I don't have access to it, or not easy access anyway. William tweets, I can see from Twitter and also from Facebook that lots of people are now beginning to ask questions, especially after the fairy tale Brazilian variant story, says William. Asking questions is one thing, William. He says people are not buying it, but doing something and coming together, that's another thing entirely. Hi to David Keane. Thanks for your tweet, David. I appreciate it. Hi to Faisal. Hi to William McGregor as well, and to Linda. Linda says, Richie, I believe that humanity is being used as a weapon against itself. We are being used to conquer ourselves, using every aspect of our nature, good and bad. We are the most effective weapon of all, the harder to resist, the most difficult to overcome. Charlotte in Burnley asks about John McGurk on Twitter. Can't find him. He does have a Twitter account. The best thing to do is to look for Gripped, G-R, that's Golf Romeo Indigo Papa Tango, G-R-I-P-T .ie. If you look for that on Twitter, you'll find their official account, and I'm pretty sure they would have retweeted John McGurk in the last day or two, or the last few hours. Good stuff. Hi to Alan in Liverpool. Wow, he says, Mockingbird is still going strong. I wonder what it's called now, Operation Rona or Operation Panic. Cheers for that. Let's move swiftly on. Speaking of Alan in Liverpool, he says, Richie, the Polish government has just ruled face scarves are banned. Only blueies or fashion masks are allowed and must be worn on the streets as well. Did I see a link to that? Did Faisal put a link out to that? Poland introduces regional restrictions and bans the use of visors and scarves. This is on a website called notesfrompoland.com. So you'll ask me now about the legitimacy of this. I don't know, but I'll read it anyway. Poland's government has reintroduced tighter restrictions in the Warmia-Masuria province, which currently has the highest rate of COVID-19 infections of the country's 16 regions. Schools, hotels and shopping malls closed on Saturday. The government has also announced new rules for face coverings, saying that visors or scarves, bandanas and similar garments can no longer be worn instead of protective masks. You've got to wear the masks. You can't wear a snood or a scarf or a bandana. That came out of Poland in the last few days. In fact, more than the last few days. That's over a week old, that. You see? You see? That's why I don't pay any attention to you on Twitter, because you're not a journalist and you're not a researcher. You send me stuff, you don't even look at the date on it. February 24th might as well be 500 years ago. This is such a rapidly rolling situation, you see. I'll train the bejesus out of you now, I don't mind telling you. 14 minutes to the top of the hour. Now, as I got into on my own website today, it is being reported that as many as 200,000 staff working in the UK NHS have refused a jab, or they've given an indication that they will not take one. Now, you might be forgiven for thinking that in that sense, or in that case, the media would be desperate to find out why, wouldn't you? I mean, I'm a journalist, and when I started out, I would have been sent around like any intrepid young reporter, inquisitive, all beaverish and running around to find out why. Hi there, Louise, is it? What do you do, Louise? You're a nurse, are you? Louise, why are you thinking of not having the jab? That's the way it would have been. UK media today? God no. They don't want to find out why 200,000 people don't want to have the jab. The UK media is only interested in, can we compel them to have the feckin' thing? What a wonderful world we live in. Journalism is dead. Don't give me that. You're naive. It's been dead a long time, maybe. It's been dying a long time. It's dead now. UK media today in its entirety. How can we compel the buggers to have the jab? Not why. Or what do they know? A question I'd like to ask them. Why won't you take it there, Billy? You're an oncologist, I believe. Yes? Why don't you want to take it, Billy? We need to hear, you see, why they don't want to take it. But see no evil, hear no evil in the UK. Rather than ascertain why, they don't care. The media pushing no jab, no job all day today. Yes. Let's have a listen to Good Morning Britain's Piers Morgan, sitting alongside Susanna Reid and the ever ridiculous Dr. Hilary Jones. Morgan is absolutely aghast is that 1/5 of 1 million people in the NHS are considering not having the poison.
It's said that as many as 200,000 NHS and care employees have refused to take the jab despite being offered it and despite working in close proximity to very vulnerable sick people. I've talked about this a lot, but I'm appalled by this.
Yeah.
And I really think it's not acceptable. And if you work in NHS and care work and you're a potential risk to the people you're caring for, you either have the jab or you don't go to work.
Morgan would, Morgan, like Louise Byrne from RTE, Morgan would describe himself as a journalist. I don't care. It's appalling. You either have the jab or you don't have a job, says the arsehole who claims to be a journalist. Wanker. There's a word now you won't hear on radio too often. I'll say it again. Wanker. His job should be, as I've already outlined, to determine why they won't have it and be curious about it. He should have no dog in the fight. He should be entirely objective. Find out. He should be saying to his producer, surely we've got interns, have we? We must have a few. Surely we've got a few recent college graduates, have we? Let's send them out to Salford Royal in Salford. Let's send them to the Christie Hospital in Manchester, to the Royal Infirmary, to find out why. Be nice to these people. Just go and ask them. No, they should be told to have the jab or they've got no job, says Piers Morgan. A journalist.
I think.
Look, we know that...
This is the doctor, Hilary Jones.
We know that about 450 or more COVID cases a day are acquired in hospitals. So if you've got staff who are potentially able to transmit the virus to you, they shouldn't be in that hospital. Would you expect a surgeon to operate on you if they were HIV positive? Would you expect a surgeon to operate if you're hepatitis B positive? No, they're not allowed to. So if you've got staff who could who could infect their patients, then it's not, they're not being professionally responsible. Now, I know a lot of them are not on the front line. I know a lot of them are on almost minimum wage.
But they're working...
It's irrelevant.
It's irrelevant.
They're looking after patients. They should...
It doesn't matter how much they
protect the patients by...
It's where they're working.
Yeah.
They're working inside hospitals
inside
and care homes.
Hospitals and care homes. I don't... We must have missed the announcement that Piers Morgan qualified as an epidemiologist. We must have missed that. We've got to list that now among his many talents, that he gets to speak with authority on what should go on in hospitals, eh? All those adverse events that are happening, eh? Commercial radio treating listeners with contempt and scorn if they dare question the need for the vaccine. Listen to LBC's Nick Ferrari, an odious little man. He's got listener Anna on. She's phoned in from Peterborough. She's not thrilled about the vaccine. And listen to the conduct of Ferrari. Listen now.
Will you be having the COVID vaccination?
At the moment, from what I'm aware, no. I will wait on for a bit more to see what's going on.
What do you need to see to persuade you?
At the moment, there is nothing to persuade me. I'm not going to take it. I am perfectly healthy and fine. I've had COVID.
Right. Okay.
I've treated myself with all the natural...
Are you aware of the new strains that we have? Like this, what's called Brazilian strain.
Oh, the Brazilian strain.
You're aware
strain.
Of that. And you're aware that, I imagine from your voice, you're probably in your 20s or 30s, is that right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Could the guy be any more patronising or condescending, could he?
Yeah.
I've also known people who are about...
Okay, no, I'll just finish if I may, thank you. So if people like you say, I'm perfectly healthy, I've had it, I don't need the vaccination, a new infection will rip through your age cohort. It will be, I'm just going to call it the Peterborough strain, because that's where you're from, and the new Peterborough strain will then attack people like your grandparents. We won't have any defences. Sadly, their health will be compromised, and the wards will be full of 20 and 30-year-olds, then followed by 80-year-olds. Do you follow what I'm saying?
I understand that elderly people, if they want to have the vaccine and they feel that they need to have the vaccine, then they should take it. But I don't. What I'm saying is that I don't feel people should be forced and should have a passport and say, no, you can't work because you haven't had the vaccine.
Okay. He's sighing away and whistling away there while she's talking, as if she's an idiot, when she's making a very good point. If older people who may feel they're vulnerable want to go ahead and take the risk of having these untested gene therapy drugs, let them have them. That's fine, but don't compel me to have the vaccine, says the lady from Peterborough. He's making a big deal of sighing and blowing out his cheeks while she's talking. you know, to let the listeners know that she's a bit of an idiot, even though she's not, she sounds nice enough.
Vaccine.
Okay. If your job depended on it, would you take the vaccine?
No, I wouldn't.
If your holiday, your ability to go on holiday, would you take the vaccine?
No, exactly. This is the point. You need to be forced to go to places.
Okay. What is your fear?
At the moment is that the government and the people are trying to control the population.
Don't you realise the very fact we're having this conversation is that they can't control the population? If they could control the population, why would one in four members of the NHS staff in London not have the jab? That's not great
because
control.
I think it's the same thing about fear. I think it's because they're confused. They don't know what's going on.
No. But if the government was in control, do you see that this wouldn't be an issue?
She's made the point that the government is attempting to control our lives by coercing us into taking a vaccine that might kill us. That's what she's doing. She's making a good job of it too. She's saying they want more control over our lives by telling us if you don't have a vaccine, you can't travel. If you don't have a vaccine, you can't work. That is taking control of what people do. He's being obtuse and obnoxious. But then he is a useless fat bastard, isn't he, Nick Ferrari?
An issue. They wouldn't need to consider forcing people to. Clearly, they're not in control, which is why they can't vaccinate the NHS in London. Do you see?
I mean, there's different parts of the argument. People can...
All right. Well, listen, you be safe. Look after your boy.
You be safe. Look after your boy. And he cuts her off. That's the media in the UK. It's dreadful, isn't it? Doesn't get any worse than that. I've never done that in my career and I'll never do it. I've invited folks who listen to this show and who disagree with me to come on during the phone-ins, and I would never treat anybody like that. But then again, neither would the people I worked for and who I learned, or whom I should say, I learned from over the years. They wouldn't have done it either. They just wouldn't have done that to anybody. This is music from Stevie Wonder. The time is coming up for 4 minutes to the top of the hour. Song called Higher Ground, the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Salford. Stevie Wonder and Higher Ground on the Richie Allen Radio Show, Wednesday's programme, March 3rd, or lockdown day 320, whatever. What is it? Does anybody have any idea? Does anybody? They'll say that they released us from lockdown last summer, but that's a nonsense. You and I know that. How long has it been since last March? How many days has it been? It's nearly 350 days, is it? I have no idea. Anyway, it's never ending, is it? It's never ending. Tweet the programme, @BBGRichie. That's the Twitter handle. Love hearing from you, so I do. Going to give a quick plug, in case I forget tomorrow, to Sunday Morning Melodies, a recent addition to the stable of... I shouldn't say stable. To the Richie Allen Show stable of radio shows. Every Sunday between 10 a.m. and 12 noon UK time, I present a kind of a throwback radio show playing songs from yesteryear and chatting about the stories of those songs, how those songs came to life, how they came to be. And I enjoy doing it. It's good fun. Sunday mornings, 10 o'clock. The best way to hear it is through my website, Richie. God, I've got to take some water. Hang on. And I have a sup of water there. Lovely. As I was saying, the only way to hear it is through my website. So you go to the homepage, richieallen.co.uk, and on the right-hand side is the player. 10 o'clock Sunday mornings. It's good fun, at least it is to me anyway. Hi to Dean Smith. Now, this is interesting, this culture war stuff, which, I don't know. Again, I've said before, some people say, it's a very Fox News thing to say, isn't it? Some people say... Well, who are they then? Well, some do say that those of us who get annoyed when the BBC decides to edit Fawlty Towers, that we're making mountains out of molehills, but I don't think we are. It was confirmed overnight that the BBC will rerun Fawlty Towers from this coming Monday as part of its Festival of Funny season, okay? But in one of the most popular episodes in British comedy history, let alone Fawlty Towers, the episode The Germans, where Basil gets a bang on the head and goes to hospital and comes back concussed and he's a bit mad and he winds up the German guests by mentioning the war. It's hilarious stuff. In that episode, Basil has a conversation with the Major Major Gowan, who's a hilarious actor called Ballard Berkeley, who plays him brilliantly. The Major is very eccentric and very of his time, right? And he has a conversation with him where the Major recounts a visit to a cricket match with a woman. And it's going to be left out. Now, I'm going to play the scene here, if you don't mind, because I want to. You've got to stand up to this nonsense, don't you? I will say, if you've got youngsters in the room and you don't want them to hear the N word or another word beginning with W, you'd best turn down your device now. I'm going to play it because it's important. Episode 40, Towers of the Germans. Here's a snippet from that website. Basil, the beleaguered hotelier, having a chat with resident the Major, permanent resident, it seems, the Major. It's great stuff, this.
Evening, Major.
Evening, 40. Hampshire won.
Did it? Oh, isn't that good? How splendid.
Oh, 40, how's a
my wife?
That's it.
Fine, absolutely fine. They're taking it out tomorrow morning.
Is she? Good.
No, not her, the nail. They won't have operated till tomorrow.
What?
The nail. They're taking it out tomorrow.
Well, how did she get a nail in her?
No, I thought I told you, Major. No, she's having her toenail out.
What, just the one of them?
Well, it's an ingrowing one, Major.
Oh, well, if it's causing you pain, you have it out.
Exactly. So, I'm on my own now. Start running this place properly.
So you're on your own, are you?
Apparently.
Well, she won't be away for long, will
no,
she?
No. Not unless there's a serious mistake.
You've always got Elsie to help you.
Who?
Elsie.
Well, she left a couple of years ago, Major.
Funny, I thought I saw her yesterday.
No, I don't think so. She's in Canada.
Strange creatures, women.
Well, can't stand around all
day. I knew one once. Striking-looking girl, tall, you know. Father was a banker.
Really?
Don't remember the name of the bank.
Well, never mind.
I must have been keen on her because I took her to see India.
India?
At the Oval. A marvellous finish. Now, Sally had to get 33 in about a half an hour, and she went off to Paula Hands or some women never came back.
What a shame.
And the strange thing was that throughout the morning, she kept referring to the Indians as niggers. No, I said. Niggers are the West Indians. These people are wogs. No, she said. All cricketers are niggers.
They do get awfully confused, don't they? They're not thinkers. I see it with Sybil every day.
I do wish I could remember her name. She's still got my wallet.
As I was saying, no capacity for logical thought.
Who?
Women.
Oh, yes. I thought you meant Indians.
No. Wasn't it Oscar Wilde who said they have minds like Swiss cheese?
What do you mean, hard?
No, full of holes.
Indians?
No. Yeah, the Germans. Faulty Towers episode goes out next week, along with the other episodes in the two seasons or two series of Faulty Towers, and that episode is going to be edited so you don't get that scene. And John Cleese, who played Basil Faulty, said of this last year, and I don't suppose anybody could put it any better, he said we, because he wrote Faulty Towers with the actress Connie Booth, he said we were not supporting the Major's views, we were making fun of them. One of the things I've learned in the last 180 years is that people have very different senses of humour. Some of them understand that if you put nonsense words into the mouth of someone you want to make fun of, you're not broadcasting their views, you're making fun of them. The Major was an old fossil left over from decades before. We were not supporting his views, we were making fun of them. If they can't see that, if people are too stupid to see that, what can one say? And I made reference in a piece I put on richieallen.co.uk today to somebody whom I mentioned on the programme recently, my former next door neighbour, very important man to me, my Italian mate Egidio, who died in the late 1990s even, when he was in his early 80s. And he referred on several occasions, as long as I knew him, he referred to black people as panthers. That's how he referred to them. And was criticised for it. You know, he was criticised. He wasn't, nobody got on a soapbox and accused him of being, you know, subhuman. But he was heavily criticised for it. Don't say that. It's not nice. It's not polite and it's stupid. You shouldn't say it. But he was beyond caring. what people thought of what he said. And if I remember, a black woman did win an Olympic swimming medal for Italy in Atlanta in the mid-1990s. And he refused to celebrate, I remember. And we were winding him up about it. He said she's not Italian, she's a panther. But he was of his time. And I wonder today about that. You know, what sort of pressures would be brought to bear on people like him today for saying things like that? And how much pressure would be brought to bear on the people around him to send him, well, to basically exile him out of your lives, to not pay any attention to him, to not speak to him, to not befriend him. It's, yeah, it's an interesting one, that. So, yeah, that series going out again on the BBC this coming Monday. But that episode is going to be heavily edited, so you don't hear that scene between the Major and Basil Fawlty, which has its place, or had its place, and still has its place as far as I'm concerned. Here's that music from the Mavericks, All You Ever Do Is Bring Me Down. The Mavericks and All You Ever Do Is Bring Me Down. The Richie Allen Radio Show, 12 minutes past 6. Thanks for staying with me. I'll be with you till around about 6.30 today, I think, or thereabouts. I've gone on longer than I anticipated today. It's been one of those mad days. Sad day today. Bit of a sad... I wasn't going to mention it, but I tell you things, don't I? You tell me things. Kind of like a quid pro quo, isn't it? Clarice and Dr. Lecter... You're definitely Dr. Lecter, you, because I'm no psychopath. I don't mind telling you. But we do share information. I picked up the ashes of my jazz today from the crematorium, and that was a bit sad. I didn't think it would be too sad, you know. I thought, having gone through the whole process of her final day, I thought that was bad enough. And it's not been great since, to be honest. And if you... are a pet lover, an animal lover, as I am, you'll have had the experience in your life. It's a rotten experience, isn't it? And yet we put ourselves through it again and again and again. But today I went and picked up her ashes. God love her. And that wasn't a great thing to do. I planned, because she was such a water dog and loved the sea particularly and rivers and was such a strong swimmer, I plan, when we get an opportunity, to scatter those ashes in a nice spot, maybe on the coast somewhere, and give her a proper send off. But not great to have to do that anyway. Bringing the mood down, aren't you, Baldy? Well, I'm not. I'm just telling you, it's the way it's been. I've had a busy old day outside the show, is what I'm telling you. I didn't think I'd last beyond 6 o'clock today, but there you are, there you are. I can rabbit on about nothing important for forever and a day, is what I can do. Thanks for your tweets, by the way, about the faulty thing. Number of you there. The faulty thing. Hi to Susan. Susan knows what it's all about. Saying goodbye to a furry friend, to a canine friend. We know that. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Somebody is accusing me of spreading scare stories about breast swelling. I didn't spread any scare stories. Somebody calling themselves Robin, who's got an LGBT flag on his or her profile. How very woke of you. I didn't spread any scaremongering at all. And I never said that the lumps were cancerous. Never said that at all. So be careful, you know. Hang people for what they've done, not for what you imagine they've done. Not scaremongering. People have every fucking right to know, women do, that their breasts might break out in lumps after they've had the coronavirus vaccine. And that after they've had their second shot, they're even more likely to develop a lump on their breast. And I did point out in my article, because I'm a good journalist, that the FDA has claimed that this is lymph node swelling. And that they claim that the lymph node swelling is just an accepted side effect of the vaccine. I did point that out in my article, because I'm a good fucking journalist. Fear porn is what you get from the Truth or Industrial Complex. Those goons on the South Coast and others telling lies about people eating babies in Hampstead schools in London or just outside London. That's the sort of crap. This is a real journalistic endeavour. It's a proper radio show. I don't put stuff on the internet that I can't substantiate. And I never said for a minute that these lumps were cancerous. What I said was every woman in the country should be aware of it. Why should any woman accept the swelling of their breasts? What woman in the world would want a swelling under their arm or under their breast? Why? They should know about it, shouldn't they? Is it in the literature, is it? I wonder, is it in the literature being given to women before they receive their coronavirus vaccine? Oh, beware now, you might get a lump under your arm or on your breast. I doubt it. I'll check that out, though, and if I'm wrong, I'll come back here tomorrow and say, oh, I was wrong, they are telling women, be careful now. You might get a lump. Don't worry, it'll just be lymph node swelling. Don't worry your pretty little head about it. I wonder if they're telling women that. Because I think you're entitled to know that you might get a lymph node swelling or a lump on your breast. And I'd be asking the question if I was a woman. Could that lymph node swelling or the lump on my breast, could that go on to become could it go on to become cancerous? Is it a possibility? No fear porn on this programme. No fear porn disseminated on my website. I do it properly. Read that article from top to bottom. I've quoted the Daily Mail in it. And I've said at the end of it, and I stand over what I said, you'd be mad, absolutely stone mad, crackers, to take that vaccine, knowing what we know now and the information that's coming out from around the world about adverse events. Right? They're saying it's just a side effect, nothing to worry about. I'm saying I'd be asking questions about that if I was any woman who was being lined up to have the jab. Anyway, I've even put the Food and Drug Administration quote right at the heart of the article about the Moderna jab and the Pfizer jab. Lymph node swelling, they're saying. I'm saying I wouldn't believe a word of it. But I also put the caveat on that at the beginning of the programme that I'm no doctor. I'm no specialist. I'm no oncologist. But I've been around the block 500 times. And I've got contacts in places like hospitals, in hospices, and in care homes. And somebody I know very well who works at Salford General, at Salford Royal, said to me two words, swine flu. Why won't you have the jab? Why are we hearing the 200,000 NHS staff have decided or... if they haven't decided, they're strongly considering not having it. Why is that? My contact said swine flu, Richie. Dr. Gabriel Scally and others told us that swine flu vaccine was fine. It was brilliant. We had a duty to take it to protect ourselves and to protect our patients. That was back in 2009, 2010, 2011. People came down with narcolepsy. This government paid out tens of millions of pounds. The pharmaceutical companies involved have been sued successfully for billions and billions of pounds, dollars, shekels, euro over the years for lying and putting bad drugs on the market. That's what they've been doing for years. Why believe them? Women are running to try and get mammograms in America. So concerned are they by these lumps. The pharmaceutical companies and the FDA says, don't worry about it. It's just lymph node swelling, an accepted side effect from the vaccine. I'm saying I wouldn't believe that. Now, it might be true, but I wouldn't believe it. If I was a woman, please God, someday I will be, I would be saying no. I just won't take the chance. I don't need to. That's my tuppence worth on that. That story is on richieallen.co.uk. Why believe them? Why would you believe them? How many times does a liar have to lie to your face before you say, no, not anymore, thanks. I'll take my chances by not having the vaccine. You see? Crazy. Absolutely crazy. Unbelievable. What are you going to do? Somebody else is saying that my article is full of misinformation. Some women finding lumps in breasts after COVID jabs, according to US doctors, is not misinformation. It's true. It's true. They're acknowledging the lumps and they are explaining them away as a side effect of having the jab. That's a fact. Isn't any misinformation there? It's a fact. And I make it very clear that it's my opinion that I wouldn't have a vaccine if I was a woman. I wouldn't have one. You don't need a lump in your breast for any reason. Who needs a lump in their breast, you know? And again, and you might be able to help me out before I depart the programme today, before we part company. I'd like to know if the literature being given to, I said patients earlier on, I shouldn't have said patients. If the literature being given to the potential subject, to the person who will be vaccinated, if it says you might get lymph node swelling or a lump on your breast, I'll be very surprised. Maybe it's buried somewhere on a pamphlet in fine print. But is any doctor saying to any woman, is any nurse saying to any woman in the United States, hey, listen, you might get a lump on your breast now, but don't worry about that. I sincerely doubt it. But again, that's my opinion, isn't it? Eh? Hi to Rob Hanley. How you doing, Rob? Rob, Julia Hartley Brewer would never come on this radio programme, and I wouldn't want her on the programme, mate. To be honest, why would I have Julia Hartley Brewer on this programme? Wouldn't be of any use to me whatsoever, really. She's a presenter for Talk Radio, and she's pushing the vaccine, isn't she? At least I think she is. Here's Julia Hartley Brewer today speaking with a microbiologist called Andrew Preston. And I think the first few seconds of this are very interesting.
There's no doubt at all these vaccines have been incredibly successful. Right?
What did she say?
There's no doubt at all these vaccines have been incredibly successful.
No doubt at all that these vaccines are being incredibly successful, she said. Now, surely Julia Hartley Brewer knows that hundreds of ambulance drivers in Dortmund came down with a very serious negative reaction to the AstraZeneca jab. She must know that. She must know that clinicians in another German district in another hospital came down with a very serious reaction to that jab. Surely she knows that in Treviso in northern Italy, dozens of teachers were so sick they were unable to go to work and a primary school had to close. Surely Julia Hartley Brewer knows this. Surely she knows about the care home in Norway, the one in Denmark, the one in Gibraltar. Surely she knows about Basingstoke, where people started dropping like flies after having the vaccination. And yet she opens her interview with a microbiologist by saying everybody knows that the vaccines are being incredibly successful. Do we? Do we really know that? Let's have a little bit. Let's hear a little bit more of that.
We still have an issue with people who don't take the vaccine, particularly among some black and ethnic minority groups, but also particularly among quite a lot of people who work in care homes. And I'm surprised by how many people working in the NHS as frontline staff. There's talk today about looking at having compulsory vaccinations for those working in the NHS. If you are a surgeon, you are required to, you know, is it hepatitis? You have to provide proof of. If I travel abroad, you know, there are places I go where I have to have a yellow fever certificate and the like. But should we move to a place where we have mandatory vaccines for anyone, even if they're working on the front line?
I'm hesitant to do that because of the backlash that we'll get. Clearly, vaccination has been a very sensitive topic for some time. And COVID, I think, has brought that into the sort of spotlight. I'd be very wary about something that might cause increased resistance in people, even amongst those who may be sort of on the edge of accepting it, because it's not just for COVID now. I think we're possibly looking at how to sell vaccination to the population in terms of its benefits, yeah. Both for now and in the future. It's quite clear we're going to be needing to vaccinate against future threats as well. And what we do now, I think, is going to leave a real legacy on how we can do that.
And in a way, you just have helped the conspiracy theorists and the anti-vaxxers by making it compulsory in that sense.
I think that will fuel those, and that's going to then filter down to those people who are genuinely concerned or uncertain, and they're going to be swayed by that. So I think those are the ones we really need to try and reach and present, you know, clear, rational evidence. And then hopefully that's, you know, my job, for example, is to make that strong enough that it convinces those people. I'm not going to tell them what they should do, that it must be a free choice. The ones I think you highlighted, I really just don't understand, are those in the NHS. Mm. Surely they must, of all people, understand the benefits that vaccination have brought over the last 70 or 80 years, but also the role that they have in protecting other people, not just those that are vaccinated, but obviously through the herd immunity and the blocking of transmission.
Yeah, this garbage again. You know, you're not just protecting yourself, you're protecting other people. This crap. Julia Hartley Brewer is 100% behind the vaccination programme and spends a lot of time on her programme and on social media decrying, giving out about conspiracy theorists and demonising anybody who asks questions about the nature of the virus and you know, comparing it to flu and flu season. So I've, you know, not a lot of time for Brewer. There was a time some months ago when Brewer appeared to be getting stuck into one or two politicians. She had a memorable exchange over the PCR testing fiasco with a Conservative MP, but she dropped it. She left it there. You know, it's the open goal. It's that easy. Brewer is Brewer. She's a Tory. She always was. She always will be, right? A broadcaster of some ability, but that's about the size of it, really, is what I would say. Let me read one or two tweets before I take my leave of you today. Ron has tweeted, and this is interesting. Now, Ron, I'm pretty sure there are not two different types of vaccine information leaflet. I don't imagine there is one for males and one for females. I could be wrong. I stand to be corrected there. Ron says, Richie, no mention of women's breasts in my NHS pamphlet. But let's face it, it is on trial for 2 years, so they do not know what it is doing to people. That's why you and I won't have it, says Ron. Ron makes a very good point there. Vaccines are in clinical trials that don't end until 2023. I'm guessing the vast majority of people in the United Kingdom are not aware of this, simply because the UK's mainstream media has not discussed it. It doesn't come up, ever. That's right, Ron. Absolutely right. However, if you take them at their word, they have trialled the vaccines, or they began trialling these vaccines 5 or 6 months ago. Presumably those vaccines, those trials did include women of certain ages, of all ages. If that is the case, and remember Moderna, let me read before I go what the US Food and Drug Administration said today. For the Moderna jab, 1 in 9 women have lymph node swelling or tenderness after the first dose, rising to 1 in 6 after dose 2. For Pfizer, it's less common, but it lasts longer, with the swelling persisting for around 10 days. If that's the case, that would have been discovered in the trials way back 4, 5, 6 months ago. That being the case, why then is there no mention of it as a possible side effect in the vaccine information leaflet? Now again, before I'm hammered for putting out misinformation, I will have to look into that further. And if I find out tonight or tomorrow that some of the leaflets being given to those about to be vaccinated, if some of those leaflets declare that it is possible that you might get lymph node swelling or a lump on your breast, I will say, oops, sorry, the information was given to people. But I'm betting that there's no such mention of lumps on your breasts or possible swellings or lymph node swellings in the information leaflets. But I stand to be corrected. And when I am found to be wrong, and it does happen because none of us are perfect, I will correct myself. That's it for the programme. Spiro Skouras is among the guests tomorrow. I'm looking forward to catching up with Spiro. Until tomorrow's programme, you enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Thanks for spending your time with me today. I've been the BBG. Bye now, speak tomorrow. Here's David Bowie, Bowie, Tomato, Tomato.